Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. In this 8th chapter of Mark, Jesus predicts again his coming death. Everything seemed to be going quite well, and Jesus is beginning into his ministry, and suddenly it says in the 8th chapter of Mark, and he began to teach them this, that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders and the priests and the scribes and be killed and rise again. Not surprisingly, Peter, who was in charge of marketing for the group, took him aside and began to rebuke him. It's a really strong word. It's not, you know, Jesus just sort of, you know, grabbing Jesus by the sleeve and saying, dude, that was really not that great. He dresses Jesus down. And Jesus responds, get behind me, Satan. For you are setting your mind not on divine things, but human things. This scene is every marketer's nightmare. I once had a marketing person tell me that there's absolutely nothing more frightful for the marketing team than when the CEO gets up to talk unscripted. You never know what they're going to say. And Jesus suddenly departs from what every marketing person would want him to say. Because, you know, if you were doing a brochure for this newly started Christian endeavor, you would say things like, come join Jesus on the mountaintop, where we have air-conditioned retreat rooms, massages, and you will be inspired to be the best you that you could ever be. You will be younger and more beautiful, considerably smarter than you are now, if you just come see Jesus. Instead, Jesus begins to speak all these things quite openly, Mark says. And he then looks at all of the disciples and those who are gathered around in the crowd and says, if you want to become my followers, if any of you want to become my followers, then let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And not only that, but if you want to live, then you need to deny yourself and you need to die in order to find life. Not only is it a kind of lousy marketing scheme, it's not in the end what many of us want to hear. For what will it profit them, he asks, to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Jesus' first instruction to this newly developing community is to take up their cross. Now, that phrase has found its way into colloquial use in lots of different fashions, some of it good, some of it kind of strange. But, you know, when someone is having a particularly difficult time with something, what do we usually say? Well, that's your cross to bear, right? Or if someone is struggling with something, lifelong illness or whether we can wag our heads and we can say, oh, what a cross they have to bear. And the problem with that is that it sort of puts them over there and you safely over here. So, for instance, when someone has some tragedy happen in their life or they're sick, and I stand convicted because I've done it myself many times. How many times when they have told you their problems have you said to them, just if there's anything I can do, please call? We say it because we don't know what else to say. But as one commenter said in the stuff that I was reading this week, she said, you know, we say, you know, please, please, if there's anything I can do, give me a call, knowing full well I won't. What if, as David Lowe suggests, taking up our cross is something different? What if it's not just bearing the burden of our lives, but what if instead taking up our cross has something to do with feeling and living fully in the life of another? What if taking up our cross might mean, at least in part, experiencing what our neighbor experiences? In the end, isn't that what Jesus does? To die on the cross is to feel what no one expects God to feel. Fear, anxiety, abject terror, and even death. That in that cross, Jesus participates most fully in the one thing that we experience without question, and that is dying. So what if bearing our cross has to do with entering fully and completely as we can the life of another? The word we use is empathy, to feel with. But what if it's more than that? What if when Jesus talks about losing our life, it means pouring ourselves out fully for the other in a way that we can't even conceive because our culture and our way of being in the world makes empty gestures? And that we spend so much time trying to preserve ourselves that we cannot or will not love another. What if taking up our cross might entail giving up our individual freedoms and rights, so that someone else can live? If we accept that, even if it's not the whole part of what it means to pick up your cross, even if we can concede that sense of being empathetic and entering into the life of another and into our community fully and forsaking ourselves so that we might find even greater life, Jesus proposes something even harder. Because he says, take up your cross and then follow. Where is Jesus going on this trip? It's not a rhetorical question. The choir knows.
Calvary.
Not Calvary by the Sea, but...
No.
Where's Jesus going? Calvary by the Sea. Yeah, he's going to Jerusalem to die. That's not a message we want either. Hey, everybody, let's all get on the bus and we're going to go to Jerusalem and get crucified. I haven't sold a ticket for that one yet. Following for Jesus means following all the way to Calvary, but not to find death, at least not as we understand it. Jesus says, if you would save your life, you will lose it. And if you will lose your life for my sake and for the gospel, you will save it. And the word that he uses for life is not zoe, which is the regular kind of life that we all live. It's psyche. It is that full and completeness of who we are. And that the more we try to hang on to it, the more we grasp it and hold it and keep it for ourselves, the less likely we are to find it. But that the very idea of full and complete and joyous and hungry and satisfied and peaceful life comes in simply letting it go, giving it up. We live in a culture that hangs on so deeply and so carefully to what we have, and we call that life. But isn't it amazing that when we can let go of the stuff of our life, we find something far more transforming, far more joyful. It is in letting go of ourselves that we finally are able to follow this Jesus. It wasn't until Abram could give up the idea that it was impossible for him to be a father or for Sarai to be a mother that finally joy comes. It is not until we give up our own illusions about our own life that we find that psyche, which is our full life, to be given away. For what will it profit us to gain the whole world if we don't find their life? And so Jesus does the impossible. He calls us to let go of all the things that hold us back from one another, that keep us from feeling with and through and for our neighbor, for having empathy for children who die and old people who are lonely and young people who are lost on their way. It is only in giving up that illusion that we fully come to life. And so may we receive that presence of God that Abraham experienced, that we too, even as we come close to the end of our lives, find maybe for the first time true and abundant life. Amen.